We know, don't we, if we have ties to this region, what our winter landscapes look like and feel like, how the trees bend, sometimes touching the ground when an ice storm passes through, or simply how native plants and shrubs respond to frigid temperatures over the coldest months. And we might notice the rhododendrons and the way their bunches of leaves draw in like an umbrella when its canopy is closed around the shaft, and the leaves themselves curl inward to reduce water loss and protect their undersides until they are able to welcome the arrival of spring. Artist Edna Palmer Engelhardt caught that tight but ready to spring open condition of native rhododendrons in the Poconos in her painting in oils titled Winter Scene. So important there is a mostly hidden mountain that contains and literally and figuratively grounds the landscape. It's an intimate scene that draws us in as a result. Engelhardt's Winter Scene, one of a number of paintings she created of the Poconos around the cycle of the seasons, is part of Mark Bidlingmeyer's art collection, appropriately housed in the home he loves so greatly in Dingman's Ferry in Pike County. And where he might view rhododendrons closed up for the season right now, just the way Edna Palmer Engelhardt captured them decades ago. Now, this is just a footnote that we'll come to understand shortly, but Mark Bidlingmeyer might well have seen rhododendrons in his travels all around the world. In Asia, for instance, they're there. And when he studied in Sweden, he might have encountered the life and work of the botanist Linnaeus, who actually gave the name rhododendron to the plant. Mark and his brother Paul are graduates of the University of Scranton, and they've been working with Carol McCulloch, director of plant giving at the school, and Darlene Miller-Lanning, director of the Hope Horn Gallery, to prepare a year-long exhibition titled Hudson River and Delaware Valley, selections from the Paul Bidlingmeyer Jr. Collection and the Mark Bidlingmeyer Collection at the Hope Horn Gallery at the University of Scranton in two parts, October and November for Paul's paintings, and February and March for Mark's pieces. We spoke with Paul in the fall, and we've been able to spend time recently with Mark Bidlingmeyer before the opening reception tomorrow in connection with the showing of paintings from his collection. We were joined on Zoom by Dr. Miller-Lanning and Carol McCulloch. Mark has made his career, as we'll learn, in the U.S. State Department, and he took a few precious moments at his office in Washington, D.C., while his staff continued to work on vexing and precarious situations in the Western Hemisphere, and he returned to those tasks post-haste. Dr. Miller-Lanning sets the stage for us.
At the University of Scranton at the Hope Horn Gallery, in the academic year of 2024 and 2025, we are presenting two exhibitions with a main title, Hudson River and Delaware Valley. And in the fall, we featured selections from the collection of Paul Bidlingmeyer Jr., who is a graduate of the University of Scranton from 1976. Paul was involved in finance and was interested in 19th century art of the Hudson River School and has that beautifully installed in his 19th century home in Easton, Pennsylvania. And then in the spring, now we are going to have in February, the next phase of that exhibition. So it is Hudson River and Delaware Valley still. But this time we are featuring selections from the collections of Mark Bidlingmeyer. Mark is Paul's younger brother. He is a graduate of the University of Scranton in 1980, and he became involved in history and diplomacy. And his work in his collection focuses more on the 20th century and is installed in his home, which is a recent construction in Dingman's Ferry. So the family has a long association with Scranton, with the Poconos, the Delaware Water Gap, the Easton area where the family was located. Their father had a dental practice there. So there's this long tradition of understanding that place in terms of family history, but also in terms of landscape and art and the way that has all evolved, kind of in that section of northeastern Pennsylvania. So those two shows are exploring some of those connections. Very happy that Mark was willing to share his work with us, which is really, really beautiful. And it's interesting to see the transition from the 19th century, primarily landscape-oriented Hudson River School pieces to the 20th century, where things start to change stylistically and also in terms of subject matter and content. So that really kind of opens up into a variety of different conversations that we can have about art at a national and a regional level, and what that kind of means as it plays out into the 20th and 21st century.
Well, Mark, how is it that you came to develop an eye for art, a love for art, when you were a young student?
I have a feeling it might have been at mom and dad's knee. I think in the interview that you had with Paul, he might have mentioned that both parents were collectors of art, antiquities, Victorian furniture, what have you. So we grew up, again, as Darlene had mentioned, in Easton, Pennsylvania, in a beautiful turn of the century home. And it lent itself to their interest and passion for collecting as well. And we always had those very formal rooms. It was difficult as children with the formal dining room and the formal living room and what have you. And I appreciated art, obviously, growing up. And funny, I was an industrious young kid, I guess, sort of cutting grass, raking leaves, shoveling snow. And on my free time, I would go to auctions, of all things. Not very typical for a young teenager and what have you. So I just really had no direction necessarily, but I purchased things that I liked. Extraordinary pieces of cut glass or a piece of silver here or there, and occasionally a print or a modest piece of artwork. But Erica, very fortunate from a very early age. I was a Rotary exchange student in 1975 to Uppsala, Sweden. So had the opportunity to travel at a very early age and had a wonderful experience there and was able to see artwork from the Scandinavian region. Back, went to the University of Scranton, and sort of, I guess I can't stay in one place for a very long period of time. A Peace Corps volunteer to South Korea, and I served with the final group in the leprosy and tuberculosis program 1980-81. So, of all things, had exposure to Asian art. And while in South Korea, traveled extensively, went also to Japan, and then hither and yon along the way would just pick up pieces of interest to me. I would say probably accelerated then, obviously, when I joined the diplomatic service and have had the opportunity to visit, I think at this point, 75 countries and various parts of the world, living in 12 of those countries for extended periods of time, everything from, again, Baghdad, Mazar-e-Sharif. It was sort of a geographic alphabet soup. My passion, really, most of my career had been spent in Africa. So Brazzaville, Congo, Rwanda, Angola, visits to Mogadishu. And yes, in each and every stop, what I would do then is pick up either tapestries or artwork. And then an exciting period of time being in Geneva for roughly 12 years, rather significant and unusual for the Foreign Service, but we were doing the arms control and disarmament talks in full throttle. And as part of that, had the ability to travel into Moscow just at sort of the waning years of the former Soviet Union. And I tell the story going to flea markets, going to bazaars, going to dank basements and what have you. The economy was collapsing, and what private individuals, families and what have you were selling their valued wares for cold cash and currency and what have you. Of course they wanted, so I have a beautiful collection, I think, that Darlene and Carol have seen of Russian icons. And it was distressing of sorts to see these individuals selling off these wares. And it was almost that, you know, bless you, these will be taken care of at least and part of a collection. So you'll need to come to the home in Demons Ferry. And the house is somewhat thematic, where I have the Africa room. And then I have the east-west corner of Asia-Pacific art. There's a few pieces that are crossover from the Hudson River School into the 20th century. But I can actually thank the State Department and the Foreign Service for helping me to visit some of the finest museums in the world. The Hermitage Museums in St. Petersburg and Moscow, the Kunstmuseum in Vienna, the Victoria and Albert in London, Quai d'Orsay in Paris. So I've always appreciated fine art. And of course, we'll never have a collection of that stature. So art collecting is a bit selfish. You like to surround yourself with things that you enjoy. So now that I'm back to Washington, I won't be able to enjoy my home and Demons Ferry that often. But when I go, it's very, very much of a refuge from sort of the fast-paced life that we live in diplomacy. So yeah, it's been an evolution since childhood, actually.
You've been to 75 countries and many of the finest museums in the world, and yet you have a place in your heart for the Poconos or Eastern Pennsylvania, the landscape here, and in fact, the art of those who render in some way or another their love for this place as well. Where did you start name-wise, or was it landscapes first, or was it a mix? How have you evolved in terms of selecting what you love in the world of art that represents that passion that you have?
Yeah, that's an extraordinary, what an excellent question, because I have to say I've had an evolution myself actually in the selection of art. And, you know, over the years had more of European art, what have you, the landscapes, you know, very traditional pieces and whatnot. Of course, incorporating the Russian icons and other pieces is all very interesting. But Erica, I think perhaps one can never escape their roots. So born in Easton, the Lehigh Valley, and then as Paul mentioned in his presentation as well, having a cabin in Goldsboro in the Poconos. So there was always a fondness and association with that. So when I purchased the home and developed the home in Dingman's Ferry, I had several friends or neighbors that were associated with art galleries, and I connected with the Hartzell Gallery in Windgap. And they actually expanded my horizon a little bit. I went to one of their, they were celebrating, I think it was Female Artists of the Delaware. And it was a vernissage, it was an exhibition, a cocktail party and what have you. And I thought, well, this is very interesting. So I saw a few pieces of May Banta, which I thought were nice. They were, you know, floral scenes, what have you. Or I think there's one that's in the collection of a stag that were just very imposing. And large pieces that seemed to fit the space of my Dingman's Ferry residence. And then fast forward, there was at the University of Strasbourg, I believe, houses a collection of Sterling Strasser and his wife, Dorothy Strasser. So really, I didn't think it was something I would be particularly interested in. I investigated more than art of that period, the 1940s, the 1950s. And I actually have a friend whose mother, Mrs. Schnee, was instrumental in the development of mid-century modern. They were close friends with Jackson Pollock and others of that particular movement. They were in Chicago. So we started to investigate that a little bit further as well. Purchased a few pieces from the Hartzell Gallery and elsewhere of the Strasser collection. Then came to learn that he was a friend of Justin McCarthy. Well, Justin McCarthy from the Waverly area or nearby in Scranton. And I'm a bit of a historian, and he had this wonderful piece, and I have two, I think, that are in the collection Darlene has curated of Washington crossing the Delaware. And it was absolutely amazing. It's something that I was comfortable with and enjoyed, and again, evolved over time from the very traditional, the very classic sort of European landscapes. And then also going into the Artist of the Delaware with Colin Yates. And I just have a passion and maybe purchased, Darlene, you can correct me, but I may have purchased too many pieces from Yates that you had to extract a few from this upcoming collection.
We had to sit a few aside, but you can never have too many Owen Cullen Yates.
Darlene, tell us about those key pictures, Washington crossing the Delaware and the portrait of Justin.
There's some really interesting cross connections in the exhibition that we have. So we just mentioned Owen Cullen Yates. So he's an artist who was doing what artists are supposed to do in the late 19th century. And art becomes a little bit more professionalized in America as a career. So there are now established art schools like the National Academy of Design in New York, where artists can go and they can be instructed and then they can earn membership and become what are called academicians, right? So you are like registered with the National Academy of Design as a qualified artist, that kind of idea. So Owen Cullen Yates is doing that sort of thing. He has connections in New York, but he also begins to work in the Delaware Water Gap. And so he's an artist in residence there at Shawnee on the Delaware and has a house in that region, but he is also instrumental in contacting other artists, teaching other artists. And so his influence, his connection to New York City from that Delaware Water Gap area then follows literally the Delaware down into places like Easton and then into Allentown. And then ultimately is going to connect with the New Hope School outside of Philadelphia. And so the big style that's kind of interesting to those people coming up from Philadelphia and out from New York City and traveling that kind of region is going to be American Impressionism. So there's an American realist kind of idea that's important in the late 19th century. So that's kind of based on the idea that you are going to present views of life that are very literal and truthful. It's not just realistic. It's something that's unidealized, right? It's unsentimentalized. So that is out there. But then American Impressionism is this looser kind of style based on, in a lot of respects, French Impressionism, although it's being taught in academies too, which it kind of isn't in France. But it's based on looser brushwork and brighter colors and a different kind of sense of the quality of light and atmosphere. And so people like Yeats are kind of introducing that, and other artists who are subsequently working into the 20th century are picking that up. One of them is Walter Emerson Baum. So he is a painter who is, again, kind of an intersection between that New Hope school and the sort of things that are coming out of the Delaware Water Gap area with somebody like Yeats. And he becomes influential in the Baum School in Allentown and is also a teacher, and then is associated with the Allentown Art Museum, and then the legacy of that institution carries on. So one thing leads to another. For Sterling Strasser, he is also originating in that Delaware Water Gap area. He's going to school in Bloomsburg, becomes a painter. His wife is a painter as well. They're also collectors, so they are connected to that side of it. So there's the production of art, but there's also the collection of it and the display and the curation, again, with the museums. And then Justin McCarthy is someone who doesn't really have the academic training by the time you're into the middle part of the 20th century. There's a whole thing where Americans wrestle with the idea of European modernism and what that means for their work. American work has had a lot of, you know, traditional attention given to realism and representational stuff. So European modernism, styles like cubism and expressionism, They're changing that and opening that out. And so there's stuff that's more abstract and non-representational and different kinds of brushwork and things that are not linked so directly to modes of perception that we would understand, you know, as we move through the three-dimensional world. So Justin McCarthy is not trained. He's closer to the idea of what was called in the late 20th century. The terminology varies, but the idea of outsider art, somebody who was working outside of that kind of art world, academic museum gallery system. And Sterling Strasser appreciates that. So there's kind of this pop culture imagery that you see in a lot of stuff that McCarthy is doing. Washington Crossing the Delaware is based on a well-known painting by Emanuel Leutze that's in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. So it's Washington in the big boat, you know, with the river and the chunks of ice. And it's an image taken from colonial history, but it's also something known in art history, and there are many reproductions of it. And so McCarthy is picking that up and doing an impression, well, not an impression, but an interpretation of that in his own way. And it's very expressive. It's got a lot of very loose brushwork, and, you know, it's based on that image, but the way that it's painted is very different. And he does it twice in very different ways. So he comes back again and again to these themes that are coming out of history and popular culture and media. And he's painting with this very kind of personalized brushstroke. So there's pop art in it. There's art history in it. A colonial stuff is in it with that particular image. The idea of expressionism is in there. He's got a little bit of all of it. And again, because he is outside of this sort of structure, he's got the freedom to do that. And Strasser sees that and appreciates it as an artist himself.
Actually, so much thanks to both Carol and Darlene. I think Carol for being aware that Paul and I had these collections, but then Darlene has been such an asset as far as educating, I think, me and Paul, as far as so many of the nuances that has given me even a greater appreciation of the collection I have. So they have been instrumental in pulling this all together. And as Darlene was chatting, it's the Delaware artists actually now have become part of my home in Dingman's Ferry, and then obviously born in Easton with Walter Emerson Baum. That becoming part of the family, I feel as though I've made the trip from the Delaware down to the Susquehanna and the Lehigh River and brought it full circle. But they both deserve an extraordinary amount of credit for pulling this together and encouraging us. But it has been a wonderful learning experience as well.
It's wonderful too, Mark, that you're able to say and mean it, that you want to be challenged. You want your collection and the art that you appreciate and even want to have around is pushed out from where you might originally have begun.
Absolutely. The only person holding me back is my wonderful restorer I found in the Madame Morris, because I would purchase, let's call them distressed pieces. And I found her. She is an absolute gem. She was able to come to the first exhibit. I hope she returns. Cheryl Chase, she's extraordinary and very, very gifted. And Erica, the pieces that she has just brought back to life and preserved, a true, true master. And now I know they're perfectly preserved for, you know, the next half century or so and what have you. A cooperative effort.
In the catalog we read, I think that you yourself are not an artist, a painter, but that you have appreciated the canvases that show or depict a gallery scene where an artist or artists are working together to create art. And that's an interesting insight into your sensitivity.
I think art was my C minus or D in school. And then it was Darlene who made the connections with the families of the Hart family. And Guy Wiggins, the father, grandfather, would add. So then she would do the research and explain the different periods and the different import that these individuals had on their lives. And really, it made it a very enriching experience.
In the exhibition, you can really get a sense of the old and the new approaches to art. I mean, there are some paintings that literally address that. So there's one by the center Wiggins, who is the son of the oldest, but the father of the youngest. And he's painting old and new New York, the view of the buildings in New York that are maybe three or five stories high, and behind them are the skyscrapers that are just being built from around the turn of the century. There's another by an artist named Eric Sloan, which is the old bridge, and it shows the bottom of an old covered bridge, but there's also a log in the foreground across the stream. So maybe there's an older bridge than the old bridge that's represented there. And then as far as artists at work, there's a beautiful scene by Oswald Jackson of young artists who are very kind of formally dressed and working in a very studious way at their easels in one of the art academies. But then that kind of contrasts with Sterling Strasser's portrait of Justin McCarthy, who's kind of wandering around painting in his bathrobe and a cowboy hat. You get a very, very broad range of what artists are interested in and how they're trying to wrestle with these transitions in style and approach over that century.
And you also have in your collection, Mark, women artists and some fine pieces by them.
Absolutely. And I think, as I noted earlier, that was one of the first exhibits I went to when I came back from overseas. The Hartzell Gallery sponsored it. And we should have obviously observed this over the years, the fine, fine work that female artists have done over time. There are certain pieces in the 1800s, what have you, where actually they were signed under the name of a man as far as commercial purposes and whatnot. It wasn't more into the early 20th century then that women finally were given the respect and the recognition that they truly deserved. And the pieces I've selected, I think Teresa Hart and Dorothy Strasser and Mae Vanta, again, they have that same, that wonderful attraction, and they indeed rival, you know, some of my favorite pieces of male artists as well. So I think only fair just to have a great representation from both sides of the block. Absolutely.
Do you have one of those you could profile for us, Darlene, a little bit? Just give us some background.
There are a couple of them. They're beautiful. There's an Aura Lee Gall seascape, which is really beautiful. There's another by Laura Wilson Luce, A View of Trees and Snow. Mae Banta was another artist who was working in the Delaware Water Gap area a little bit earlier than the other two, coming out of the late 1800s into the early 1900s, who did a lot of different things, still life of various sorts with flowers and objects and different sorts of things, who came from a family of artists. And then Edna Palmer Engelhart, who is known for her landscapes in the Delaware area. So Mark is busily working on a set of those that deal with the seasons.
Again, it's very simple art, naive almost, but I think I have three of her four seasons. And I hate to tell you, Darby, that summer is up in the next 2 weeks. I may have to crowd the collection and I may have to introduce summer if I'm the successful bidder for that piece.
You started, Mark, going to auctions when you were young. Is there something of a game in the bidding and trying to make sure you get what you're hoping to acquire?
I think that must be part of it, but you surely need to associate with, I think, ethical auctioneers, what have you. Obviously, you have to separate your friendship from the business portion of it. Well, there's several auction houses and whatnot that I've dealt with, and fortunately, I've come to know them, they've come to know me. A little tip as far as, you know, where we'll be taking possession of a certain residence, what have you, and there might be a piece of art there that you could be interested in. But it's all been very above board, what have you. Some days you're the winning bidder, sometimes you aren't. If it's something I like, Erica, it's no holds barred, and I just get it. Yep.
When we think about it, you live with these pieces, Mark, and they're part of your family in that way, and you love introducing them to your guests, but now they're out in a formal gallery space, and people you don't know are walking by and stopping and looking, or there will be, and you will be opening eyes and introducing a large number of people through the extent of the show to artists they might not know, and that's a wonderful gift that you're bringing. How are you thinking about what you and Paul have done to make these paintings available to the rest of us?
Well, that's in fact, how often do you have such an opportunity? That's why I think Darlene and Carol have been so instrumental. And maybe we used Paul's exhibit as a primer to bettering mine. And it was interesting, as I walked through the gallery that evening, the connections and associations were extraordinary. An artist introduced himself to me, gave me his card, that he too was very familiar with the Delaware region. I think he has a studio, it might be in Milford or what have you, and invited me to see some of his artwork and whether I might be interested in adding something to the collection. Others, they remember in either their grandparents' home or their parents' home, something from Cullen Yates. It was extraordinary just to see the vast network of such a simple exhibit, a simple display. And then again, yes, that you have a cadre of individuals that are coming to appreciate what you have done, what you have brought together, and sharing is caring. So it was absolutely perfect. So I look forward. I think Darlene sent me some photos. It seems as though she has it so beautifully staged.
Mark, did you also feel with Paul's collection that we were seeing it in a completely different light? Like it was right in front of you instead of on the wall. And it just brought a whole different level and a whole different perspective to it.
Well, I think Carol and Darlene both know Paul's home, and it can be a little bit overwhelming because you're in the 1850s, 1860s Victorian townhome with ornate moldings and chandeliers, what have you. So the art fits very much into the home. Yet when we went into the gallery, of course, it's just very pristine, very, very white and what have you. And then to see the pieces just come to light in a different environment. So Carol, absolutely right. Darlene sent these teasers, especially Walter Emerson Mount, which is one of my favorites, and saw this huge painting, what have you, then in the larger display. And I can't wait to see them in person again.
And Darlene, I know you are so sensitive. You're a curator who has a real good sense of how to position paintings. They can speak to each other, have a conversation with each other, and then with us, because we can see some juxtapositions and differences and commonalities. And so we learn that way, too, not just with an individual canvas, but with the conversations between and among them.
It is absolutely a dialogue with the works, between the works themselves, and then with the viewers and how they see them and how they move through that space and see things in relation to each other. Sometimes you can see things that are hanging side by side, and that's clearly, you know, there's a relationship there. But sometimes you see things across the room, and maybe they wouldn't look good next to each other, but when you see them at a distance and you see them in context, you know, with a different kind of space between them, but still in relation to each other, it's just this moment like, oh, wow. So that I think is partly what's happening, particularly with this show and something like those two views of the artists in the studio, mm-hmm. one from the early 19th century and one from the late 19th century. You can see them from the same vantage point in the gallery, although they're not next to each other. And yeah. You feel that separation, but that link as well.
She had so staged it that she would put something on a corner and almost teasing you to then turn to see what might be around the corner. So very, very cleverly done.
Well, let me ask you, Darlene, give us the particulars then. We want to come to see these pieces and have our own exchange with them. And we also want to be there to meet Mark on the opening day.
Our opening day is Friday, February 7th. We'll have a lecture with Mark at 5:00 in the Kane Forum in Leahy Hall. And that will be followed at 6:00 by a reception in Highland Hall at the Hope Horn Gallery. So we hope everyone can come.
And how long will we have to view the show?
The show runs through March 14th.
Darlene Miller-Lanning, director of the Hope Horn Gallery, Carol McCulloch, Director of Planned Giving at the University of Scranton, joining on Zoom with Mark Bidlingmeyer, art collector who has made his career in the U.S. State Department and who is a graduate of the University of Scranton, all speaking in anticipation of the opening reception tomorrow for the exhibition Hudson River and Delaware Valley, selections from the collections of Paul Bidlingmeyer Jr. and Mark Bidlingmeyer. And this will be part two, featuring selections from Mark's collection. Paul's collection was featured in the fall. That will be Friday, that's tomorrow. There will be a collector's lecture at the Kane Forum in Leahy Hall, 243 Jefferson Avenue, getting underway at 5, followed by a gallery reception in the Hope Horn Gallery in Highland Hall, 301 Jefferson Avenue, and that gets underway at 6. And for more information, check the website, scranton.edu, scranton.edu. And there is an extensive and rich catalog that accompanies this two-part show. Hudson River and Delaware Valley, selections from the collection of Mark Bidlingmeyer, with an opening reception tomorrow, Friday, February 7th, collector's lecture in Leahy Hall at 5, and a gallery reception at the Hope Horn Gallery, Highland Hall, at 6. For more information, on the web, scranton.edu, scranton.edu. The exhibition runs through March 14th.